From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right. Tomorrow's show, ABQ Connect. Remember, we've got our Friday financial update. I was talking to Brian Cochran this morning about tomorrow's content, and he had mentioned that Money 101 that they're going to have on their insights tab at johnmoore.com. And we're going to dive into that a little bit. So make sure you're tuned in for that. Of course, an update from the Heritage Foundation and more. Actually, I think we will rebroadcast the time we spent with one of the assistant pastors at Calvary Chapel, New Harvest in Los Lunas, about the men's event that's coming up. And quite honestly, about October events and even some early November events happening in Valencia County you'll want to know about. So make sure you're tuned in tomorrow on the 1 o'clock hour on ABQ Connect. Spending a full hour today with our in-studio guest, Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. In-studio, Paul, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, good to be back with you.
Always enjoy this, a full hour of getting informed. And I tell you what, if people are not going to these sites, they really should spend some time. Let me go through them very quickly. TippingPointNM.com. This is a podcast that Paul does. And Paul, do you have another regular on that with you?
So we do two a week, and one of the shows is my co-host Wally Drangmeister and I just running through some of the important issues every single week. And then the other show is a interview kind of deal where I talk to people. Sometimes they're a guest speaker. We just had one. Trent England was talking about the importance of the Electoral College, and you know, we have all kinds of different guests on the show. So Tipping Point NM will get you to those weekly two shows that we have.
And actually, there was a luncheon and a dinner, I think, that the Rio Grande Foundation was letting folks know. We were announcing on the Electoral College, just kind of educate people on, you know, why it's important that it remains the way it is. Were you able to attend either of those?
Well, we had both of those events. One was in Clovis,
right,
and then one was here in Albuquerque last Wednesday evening in Clovis and Thursday in Albuquerque. And I was at both of them. Made the drive 3 hours each way to Clovis to get to our events. It was great because our speaker is from Oklahoma City and he was driving out. So I figured, why not figure out a place in eastern New Mexico we can do something like this? And we haven't done a ton of events in Clovis over the years. Yeah. It's a decent-sized town and great people out there, and had a really good time and a good turnout for both events.
Good. Well, I hope those listening at 90.7 FM were able to take advantage of that, broadcasting from Cannon Air Force Base covering Clovis. I also wanted to mention a place to get informed, RioGrandeFoundation.org, another great opportunity to, and specifically the Freedom Index there. The events that, that we just mentioned posted there and other information. Regularly you can go there to find content from Paul and those helping him out at the Rio Grande Foundation. Actually, all of what we're covering today are from blog posts Paul's done, or I didn't actually look to see if you're the writer of each of these, Paul, but errorsofenchantment.com, the other site, a great opportunity, just a lot of good information. We are going to zip right through this hour because there's lots of things to talk about. Paul, the first one, the headline, Rio Grande Foundation looks at the 2024 statewide ballot measures and a few local issues in preparation. What a great opportunity for those, you know, that I know, Paul, it's just not unusual for people to get into the booth to vote. And they're like, I don't know. Well, that sounds good. But they really don't. It's part of what actually Carla Sontag and I talked about, even some of the things that are written on the ballot. Sometimes it's like, okay, I have questions about that. Well, you need to take the time to get informed about, you know, all of it. But we're going to walk through some of that. Let's jump right into that article and some of the bond questions that you address.
Yeah. So first and foremost, right now, we're going to just talk about statewide. So this is whether you're out in Clovis or you're right here in Albuquerque or you're somewhere else in New Mexico. All of these are relevant to you. And I think we can hit on the bonds as well as constitutional amendments because those are both statewide. There are four bonds. There's four constitutional amendments. Bonds are placed on the ballot. They are debt that the powers that be, the legislature, would like to take on in order to support some spending, typically capital in the form of, you know, hard projects, physical goods that not used all up in one particular year. There's something that can be used over time. One of those things is senior facilities, essentially $31 million in bonds. That's bond question one. Bond question two is $19 million in bonds to fund public libraries across our state. Bond three, by far and away the most expensive and the one that I think voters should have the most heartburn about, is $230 million for higher ed institutions. We, of course, have so-called free college in New Mexico. We're a state that spends a lot on higher education. We have a lot of campuses across the state of New Mexico. And I think a reality check is needed for our higher education system. Now, I've been around the block a few times. I know that typically bonds and these things pass pretty overwhelmingly. But to the extent that I want folks to really focus on one, that is the one I think needing the most kind of kicking of the tires and vetting and maybe concern among the voters. Then four is bond question four, $10.3 million in bonds to modernize public safety and radio communication systems. Moving on to constitutional amendments, you have a couple geared towards benefiting veterans. One is to, in New Mexico, you currently only have a tax exemption on your property taxes if you are 100% disabled. This would allow people who maybe are 50% disabled in the line of service, or 25 or 75, to get that requisite tax exemption. So if you're considered 50% disabled, you get a 50% tax exemption on your property
taxes. Real quick on not necessarily this particular amendment, Paul, but just amendments in general. Can some of what's being addressed with the proposed constitutional amendments be handled through other legislation that isn't as permanent as an amendment that is, you know, once it's an amendment, it's... if it turns out, you know, that wasn't such a great idea, it's a little harder to, I guess what you said about vetting some of this, you know, if you're going to vote yes or no, I mean, just be well informed, because, I mean, my thought just going into any amendment is that's a pretty permanent thing.
Yeah, you could argue that that is something that should be done differently. Now, it is worth noting that New Mexico is not a state that has the direct democracy that you find in, quite frankly, a lot of our neighboring states. Direct democracy has its pluses and minuses. Those come in the form typically of the initiative process and the referendum process. The initiative is where you and I are concerned about something, we collect signatures, we get it on the ballot, and then everybody votes on it.
Right.
Referendum is the politicians do something, we don't like it, we collect signatures, we put it on the ballot, and people vote on it that way. In New Mexico, we don't really have those. The constitutional amendments are approved by the legislature, first and foremost, so this went through legislative process. Then the voters will vote on it, and then you'll have kind of final legislation exactly determining what is going on here. And yeah, you could do this easily through a legislative process. I think that probably would be even a better way to do it. But The policy is on your ballot, and it's going to be interpreted, I think, as a we like this or we don't like this. I suspect people will like it, and they'll go ahead and vote for it, as well as number two, which is to increase the property tax exemption for veterans from $4,000 to $10,000 and index it to inflation. So again, another benefit for our many veterans in the state of New Mexico. The third one is to allow the UNM Law School dean, who currently chairs the Judicial Nominating Convention or Commission, rather than serving themselves in that role, to designate somebody who would be an associate dean, a faculty member, retired faculty member, or a former dean. I don't really have an issue with that. The fourth one is one that I think has some concern about it as well. So, bond question three is the one I have concerns about, constitutional amendment four. This one, currently, you have classes of counties. I believe there's three, A, B, and C, bigger counties, B counties, medium-sized counties. I'm talking population, not territory, and then C counties. So the legislature sets the salaries of county officials, county commissioners, and it does it based on population. There is an argument, and I don't think it's an entirely invalid argument, but I do think people are going to have some heartburn about it, that would allow the individual county commission groups to vote to set their own salaries. That has, you know, certainly some concerns there. And, you know, obviously somebody defending this would say, well, if they go crazy, then people will vote them out of office. Doesn't always work like that, but that's plausible. You know, should people in a more economically vibrant county like Bernalillo County or maybe Lee or Eddy County in the southeast be able to set different higher salaries for their county officers? I think that's an open question. Right now it's all done by the legislature, and that's the way it goes. So those are statewide issues. Other things that we want to talk to people about, down in Las Cruces, a big tax increase is on the ballot on the gross receipts tax. That's one that we have a lot of concern about. In Bernalillo County, voters will decide whether to renew a 6.4 mil property tax for 8 years to fund the UNM hospital. There's been a lot of criticism, including by us over the years at the Rio Grande Foundation, that UNM hospital is utilized. It's a benefit for the community that is utilized by people across the state of New Mexico, but really only paid for in a substantive way by local voters here in Bernalillo County. I think that system is wrong. I think other taxpayers should be asked to pay for that level one trauma center, the only one in the state. But that's, you know, this is on the ballot, and people can say, no, I don't like this, the way this is going on. This is a significant property tax component. You go onto your property tax bill, 6.4 is quite a significant percentage of your property taxes in Bernalillo County. And it's one of the reasons we pay higher taxes than people in other counties, including Sandoval. There's Judge Cindy Leos, who I think has reason to not be retained. We have retentions. Rather than focusing on all the individual judges, I would like to focus attention on one and see if we can educate people and say maybe not retain that individual judge. And then right here in Albuquerque, we have this this amendment to the city charter. Currently, the charter states that council, city council, can terminate the fire chief or the police commissioner for cause, but does not specify how cause is determined. Additionally, the current charter does not specify whether the mayor may terminate employment. This amendment, if adopted by the voters, would specify that the mayor may terminate the chiefs for any reason. It clarifies that for cause determination by the inspector general only applies when city council removes a chief. So this would theoretically free up both the mayor and city council and clarify how the fire chief and the police chief can be terminated if they are perceived to be not doing their jobs. Fire chief, pretty uncontroversial. Police chief, highly controversial.
Yeah, so. And not just right now. I mean, that's kind of been an issue for several years with different police chiefs. So Okay, so listen, if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. You can catch his podcast at Tipping Point New Mexico, something he does a couple times a week. You can also find information, of course, at RioGrandeFoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com, which is where issues and the things we're going to be covering today, you'll find all of these articles at errorsofenchantment.org. Take a quick break and come back with more after this on ABQ Connect. All right, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect, covering some articles and information Paul Gessing has posted at Errors of Enchantment. Actually, we were talking about off the air. You know, on our website, we've provided some voter guide information at klyt.fm. Listen, on the homepage, you're going to find kind of the above the fold, stuff we really want to be making sure people are aware of. Typically, we'll do that. And right now on our homepage, you'll actually see Hurricane Helene relief site, you know, that's available to you. We're going to update that too, and just it'll be just in general hurricane relief after Milton has rolled its way now through Florida. But along with the voter information we have there already from the New Mexico Family Action Movement and Better Together New Mexico, watch for an edition of Errors of Enchantment because you'll find. Well, a lot of what we're talking about today. I mean, our first segment covered the bond issues, constitutional amendments, and other local issues around the state. So you can, you know, walk your way through that again if you were kind of had one ear on the radio today. But all the other things we're going to be talking about today, Paul, including the evolution of economic freedom in New Mexico. And actually, as we go through this, you know, when people hear, I mean, they can think for themselves what economic freedom is, but specifically, what are we talking about?
Well, I specifically want to conclude our last conversation and note that early voting is currently going on at the county clerk's office downtown. The early voting that most people do is spread out around town. You can check the Bernalillo County clerk's office for voting sites. They typically now are the same general sites, so if a place was available 2 years ago, you'll be able to do early voting at the same place.
And that opens, that expands on the 19th.
Yes.
Which we were talking about off the air. It's on a Saturday, which is kind of nice. You know, I don't know if I'd really put much thought into it, but I think a lot of people that decide not to go vote is they wait till the last minute on a Tuesday election day. They're at work and they're busy, and these weekend opportunities really should help get the vote out, and we hope you'll participate. We're, less than 30 days away at this point, so really critical that you participate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'll be waiting until sometime after the 19th during that two-week period. Very rarely are there lines, so if you're concerned about time or whatever, that's the golden opportunity. That's the window I use. In terms of the economic freedom of North America and New Mexico's position within it and what it means. So long and short of it is that this is a report done by a Canadian think tank, kind of a peer of the Rio Grande Foundation, but based in Canada, dealing nationally. And this is a report that is going to be published with new information for 2024 in a matter of a month or so. But I felt like I wanted to take the opportunity to dig through the variables in the report, which center on government spending, taxation, and regulation. So those are the components of economic freedom. It's pretty simple. Does government take more of the money or do they leave it in your hands? Do they tax more or tax less? Now, normally, in most states, taxation and spending will be kind of, you know, related in a more close way, because in most states, if you have high taxes, you'll have high spending. If you'll have low taxes, you have low spending. New Mexico is very unique in this matter because we have relatively moderate taxes, and those taxes have gone down slightly since the first year covered by 1981. But our government spending has exploded in New Mexico since 1981. You say, how is that? Well, we have this little thing called oil and gas, which disproportionately pays the bills for our citizens right here in New Mexico. So New Mexico is unique. We are a high-spending, moderate taxation state. We're not a low-tax state. Don't let anybody tell you we're a low-tax state. We're a moderate tax state. Regulation is the other one. How does government put its finger into the economy and pick winners and losers? And how do they regulate beyond the basics of things that will benefit you in the form of cleaner air, that kind of thing? How far down that path do they get? Regulation has also it has improved slightly relative to other states in New Mexico's 1981. But it is nowhere near where it needs to be. We're still a heavily regulated state, and we ultimately are in the bottom quartile among the least free states in the country. And we're in an area of the country where most of the states around us are actually the most free or close to the most free, including Texas and Oklahoma, which are among the very most free. Even blue Colorado is a relatively free state economically, as is Arizona and Utah. So we have a long way to go in New Mexico, and I think it's interesting to dig into these reports and see where things have evolved over the last 3 decades.
Well, glancing at the map, Paul, it supports what we've said many times, I believe, in our time together. The color New Mexico is on this map closely represents California, not only California, but Oregon and Alaska and New York.
Exactly. We are in those states. Despite our position in the American Southwest, which is an area of the country generally known as kind of, quasi-libertarian, fast-growing, a lot of people moving there, economically free, socially moderate, we're definitely in the very progressive category of states, much more like a California or an Oregon than we are like a Texas or an Arizona.
All right. Another blog posted at heirsofenchantment.com, America's Great Transformation. And really what's being covered here, I guess primarily in the blog, Paul, is transfer payments. Can you kind of explain that and what is happening?
Yeah. Well, the simple thing is this is, again, historical data, 1970 to 2022, an organization called the Economic Innovation Group put together a report showing how Americans, generally speaking, all across the country, but including especially right here in New Mexico, have grown more and more, if you will, addicted to government, federal spending and transfer payments, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security to an extent, because that's not something that you actually pay in and get back what you spend. It's just another government funding mechanism. We had chances to reform Social Security and put your name on that money and invest and whatnot, but that hasn't been done. So ultimately, a lot of what the federal government does these days is take money from one group of people and give it to another group of people, whether they need it or not. And this data, this chart, this example shows that back in 1970, most places across the country were in the minimal category. Less than 15% of the personal income on average in a county was minimal. Moderate, the blue, was 15 to 25%, essentially, and there was a fair amount of that, but very little yellow, which is significant, 25% or more of the individuals of that county share of income being from the government. And then over time, till 2022, now the country is swathed in yellow, some blue, and a few islands of green, meaning that an overwhelming majority of American counties, including nearly everything right here in New Mexico with a few exceptions, is heavily dependent to the tune of 25% or more of their income based on federal transfer payments. I'd be interested to see how high these numbers could go. Why 25%? Why not go to 35% or 50%? As I have a few places in New Mexico and some others across the nation where government dependencies kind of a way of life. And we know that there are areas and challenges in New Mexico. But again, dependency on anybody, let alone the federal government, is not a way forward for most people. It does not lead to great success and better outcomes, marriages that sustain themselves, non-drug use, and those kinds of things. It's just not a good way to live your life.
So one of the things that the very end of that blog I thought interesting, Paul, you write that while there are significant differences between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, neither one seems interested in addressing entitlements or even reining in government spending dramatically. And often on this program, we'll say, you know, you don't like what you're seeing. Well, you have opportunity to change that by, you know, your vote. When it comes to on a national level, you know, essentially you're saying here, there's, you know, neither one of them really want to rein in that government spending. Is there other things we need to consider?
Well, in this case, yeah, the presidency is responding, both candidates, to what they see as a lack of interest and passion among the electorate. Now, for years and years, like Lucy and Charlie Brown in the football, Americans have voted for what they saw as conservative candidates, and for whatever reason, things fell through when it came to reforming some of these systems. I mentioned Social Security. Looking at the stock market now and the returns that that has achieved versus what you're going to get out of Social Security, it's not even close. You would be doing so much better. In fact, you know, now I'm 49. Back when I was, say, 40, I would tell people gladly, take all my money that I've paid into Social Security, and if you let me invest everything moving forward, I will have a great situation. I'll have much, much more money to retire on. Now I'm 49. I haven't re-ran the numbers and seen, you know, of course you're dealing with prospective stock market performance, but we know that I would have done very, very well for myself based on the current stock market situation versus the prior. And, you know, throw inflation in there, all the other cost increases that would have eaten into that. Your returns are much better typically in the markets versus the way the federal government Social Security program works. And Medicare is just completely unsustainable. It's a system that is doomed to failure. And, you know, the only reason we're even contemplating as a nation sticking with these programs is because the Federal Reserve prints money, and we saw how that leads to inflation. If you think that was bad, wait till the bills start to pile up even more for these programs. But the politics just don't seem to be there in terms of people willingly acting in a political system to avert a crisis. Our system is not very good at doing that. Normally, the crisis comes and then we react. And that seems the path we're destined to be on in this country when it comes to the entitlement burdens and the way our government programs work.
All right, listen, if you just tuned in, a full hour today with Paul Getzing from the Rio Grande Foundation. A reminder that his podcast, you'll find it tippingpointnm.com. That's Tipping Point New Mexico podcast. And Rio Grande Foundation website is riograndefoundation.org. And the content we're discussing today, right from the blogs posted at errorsofenchantment.com. Many times on this show, we've heard Paul talk about his opinion of the roads in New Mexico, and we're going to take a break and come back and see if anything's getting better in that area. We'll be back after the break on ABQ Connect. Well, as we went into the break, I kind of teased, not only teased you with what's coming up, but teased Paul about not really tease, because he's right about the condition of New Mexico roads. But I'm just kind of rubbing salt in the wound, I think. Paul, how's that whole New Mexico roads thing going?
Not well. And I was a little surprised when I encountered this little report here. So the background is that there was an article recently based on data from the Legislative Finance Committee highlighting that New Mexico has $6 billion, with a B, dollars in unspent capital outlay dollars. We have one of the most arcane and broken systems. They often call it the Christmas tree bill in Santa Fe. It is a mess. It is basically no prioritization, no real pattern or understanding that we have needs both locally and at the state level that can be funded through this capital outlay process. So individual politicians grab some money, so to speak, and it may not pay for the entire project. There may be issues with the price of construction going up and the money not being enough to fund it, et cetera, et cetera. All kinds of issues with our capital outlay process. But we do have that money sitting around, and I thought, you know, I'd seen some reports about potentially raising the gas tax in New Mexico in the upcoming legislative session. I thought, what are our roads like around the state of New Mexico? And as it turns out, the very first report, when you get on the handy-dandy Google machine, you look up states' best and worst roads, a report from John Foy Associates finds that New Mexico has the very worst roads in the United States of America.
Say it isn't so, Paul.
I have to admit, I was a little surprised by that. I travel around a fair amount. I've certainly familiarized myself with more New Mexico roads than any other place in the country. But it wasn't something that I immediately assumed. You know, I figured maybe, a state like Illinois or California, where they, have much bigger population, have that horrible traffic. Well, the report does rank our rural roads and our urban roads, and it gives them poor marks. Also, we have the third highest death rate on our roads, which I realize is not especially related to the quality of the roads, but it also has a certain function there with the drivers and their capabilities. But the fact is that New Mexico's roads are in bad shape. Louisiana, Mississippi, California, Arizona, Colorado. So some neighboring states there are bottom as well. And we have a lot of work to do. And I think, maybe some of that $6 billion sitting around should be repurposed. And so we're talking to some legislators about ideas on sunsetting, maybe, if money's been sitting in an account for, a decade, that it could be repurposed for things that are actually
important needs.
Yeah.
Right? The other thing on that, and I don't know really enough about this to comment on it, but I will. I hope when they go to do the work, it'd be nice to drive by those construction trucks and see New Mexico plates on the trucks as opposed to out of state. And I'm not even sure if that's the case with road work, but so often you see money, it seems, that government projects. And again, I don't know enough. I actually should probably look into that. I sure would love to see the money staying local.
Yeah, I certainly understand that concern. I'm not. I'm more of a let's see the results, let's get the job kind of person. If the money stays local, that's certainly welcome.
You make a good point, because often when it comes to he works for the family, that's why he got that job. And what I say of nepotism, which I think you can apply here, is I agree with it when the person gaining the benefit of it is worthy of it because they do a good job. So.
Yeah, exactly. But I just want the roads to get better.
I just want the roads better.
And, that's one of the things that can happen, though, is people move their businesses to take advantage of opportunities. And we know that we went through a tough spell for several years before the oil and gas boom really kicked off. Where people in the construction business were leaving New Mexico, maybe we could attract some folks back to New Mexico and kind of get that rising tide going in a lot of these businesses and industries. So, we'll just take the best we can get, and maybe we'll turn some of those out-of-staters into good old-fashioned New Mexicans.
All right, if you just tuned in, we're visiting with Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, going through some of the articles found at Errors of Enchantment. We do this once a month for a full hour. And on today's broadcast, we're going to jump into our next topic, government-centric view of New Mexico's politicians. This is a good article, Paul, or blog. A few comments that reminded me, yeah, right? They work for us. What's first, the citizen or the state?
Yeah, and in New Mexico, a lot of our politicians seem to believe that we exist for the state, and even more so that the state can or should somehow exist independent of the people. And I know that sounds kind of wild, but here is the full text of a tweet from the Speaker of the House on September 17, 2024. Today, the Legislative Finance Committee's experts forecasted that permanent fund investments in New Mexico will surpass oil and gas as our leading revenue source by 2039. So basically, that is stating that we will no longer rely on oil and gas coming out of the ground in an individual year and the taxes on that, but a majority of our money as a state will be generated by investments from past oil and gas that's come out of the ground and that the state has held on to. That's the $54.7 billion I keep railing about. And why are we putting that all in government accounts rather than returning it to New Mexico? That is a clear focus. We need that money to stick around in government and invest it and get more money for future government spending than we do for the people of New Mexico. So oil and gas, having that as your top revenue source is already enough of a problem. Having investments on oil and gas, I believe, is a bigger problem. And that, where does that prioritize New Mexicans as individuals and taxpayers? How are our rights being protected? I think it is very problematic. And then it talks about today's prosperity serving New Mexicans for generations to come. And yeah, oil and gas and government are in a prosperous position, but are the rest of us? I think that is very questionable. So really, unfortunately, again, a government-centric attitude, an attitude that doesn't account for what is the greatest resource, Steve, in the world. It is the human mind, and we need more smart people. We need more workers, young people coming to New Mexico. Nothing against the older folks that retire here, but quite frankly, they're not the ones that are contributing the sweat and the muscle, the brain power to improving our state on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, you like to think doctors are kind of smart people, Paul. That'd be nice to have in the state.
They'd be nice to have. A lot of them. We need to attract them.
We'll cover that another day.
Yeah.
All right. Education has come up often on this program. And obviously, if you're following the Rio Grande Foundation at riograndefoundation.org or bettertogethernewmexico.com, you've seen articles on education. But this blog post says, Paul, New Mexico K through 12 preliminary data indicate stagnant education results. Tell us what you're finding.
Yeah, I wish it was our findings specifically, but it's actually, again, statewide testing data. Now, it's worth doing a little bit of a history lesson here. We had a statewide test on education. It was under the previous governor, Susana Martinez, when Michelle Lujan Grisham came in. She replaced that test and put a new test in place. Okay, that's great, but it changes and kind of eliminates the utility of how did we do this year versus last year when you change the test. Well, now Michelle Lujan Grisham has been in office for 6 years, and we have several years of results, even with the COVID pandemic. Unfortunately, the results are not particularly good in the statewide test. So as the Santa Fe New Mexican points out in their analysis of the results, student achievement data from the past school year is out, and it's more of the same. Reading proficiency for students in New Mexico public schools is stagnant at 38%. Math proficiency is down 2 percentage points to 22%, according to test data from the end of the 2023-24 school year. What does that mean? Well, we all know, hopefully by this time, anyone listening to the sound of my voice knows that New Mexico struggles mightily in our education outcomes, according to another test, this one by the federal government, the NAEP, National Assessment of Educational Progress, New Mexico, ranked dead last in 2022. Those results won't be available until 2024. But if this is any indicator, I suspect that New Mexico's results in the NAEP will also be stagnant, meaning that we will probably find ourselves yet again at the very, very bottom when it comes to educational outcomes. If we were stagnant and we were number one, that would be a different story. But stagnant and dead last is no bueno, as they say. So that's where we are.
You know, a ship obviously turns fairly slowly. It'd be nice to see something other than stagnation there where the ship is beginning to turn. We are up against break. We're going to take our final break, short break, and come back with more with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us. We're continuing our conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation and the blog postings at errorsofenchantment.com. And I have to tell you, Paul, each time, I mean, you know, there's often stuff that's not real fun to talk about, and then there's sometimes it's just informative information. My favorite, I think maybe your favorite too, is to find those times where you have something to talk about on a positive note.
Yeah, we've got a couple things to talk about in the last segment here on a positive note. One is, it was about 6 months ago, and I had heard that there and seen some proposals put together by the Public Education Department of New Mexico relating to school lunches that were just ridiculous. We talked about them. They involved putting all the preparation for food in the school. If they had a kitchen, that was great. But if they didn't, then they were going to have to come up with a kitchen. The regulations showed no wiggle room. There's going to be composting on site and all kinds of other things that were going to really cause problems for New Mexico's schools. Setting aside what we just talked about in the last segment about the system and our kids' poor results in these education measures across our country and across the world. So pushed back against that. We issued a call for comments. We did some comments ourselves. I'm sure several school officials across New Mexico commented as well. And shock of shocks, after a few months here, I wrote about this on September 26th, that we were successful. The insane rule requirements were essentially distilled into the following. 50% of weekly required meals, with the exception of milk, shall be freshly prepared. Doesn't necessarily have to happen on site, just fresh food. Great. Students in grades K-5 must have at least 20 minutes to eat. Totally agree. Donate unused food to students, food banks, and other nonprofit and charitable organizations. Great opportunity to use unused food or give unused food to people in need, whether those be students, food banks, or other nonprofit organizations. And finally, an emphasis on purchasing unprocessed and minimally processed food for school lunches. That is a fundamental issue I think we're going to be hearing quite a bit about. We've heard some Senate testimony. There's been a lot of discussion about processed food and how it contributes to our health problems, specifically in the United States. And kudos to PED for coming back with some very common sense regulations for school lunches. So the process worked for once, Steve.
All right, moving on to another article, and actually we had mentioned the events that the Rio Grande Foundation let us know about in regards to education about the Electoral College that happened last week. Here's another opportunity for you to get out and get a little bit of education when it comes to the federal judicial nominations, and you'll find it at riograndefoundation.org on the events page. Paul, this is coming up relatively soon, October 23rd.
Yes, Indian Pueblo Cultural Center luncheon. Our speaker is Nick Ganji. He is chief counsel to U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Ganji is one of these knowledgeable people. He was brought to us by the New Mexico Federalist Society, which is an organization also works with judges and legal issues. And he is going to discuss where things are heading in the future with regard to the judiciary. You know, we've seen a move towards a more, what I would call, common sense judicial approach, thanks in part to Donald Trump's judicial nominees, and just left away from, we're going to do whatever government power says we should do as judges, to a little more questioning of judicial of power centralized in government, and focusing on the Constitution and what it actually means and says. So if you want to find out more, that is on October 23rd. And again, he'll be looking into his future in the crystal ball, a Harris administration. What's that look like? A Trump administration. What does that look like? And we'll see where this all goes. And the judiciary is obviously an extremely important group of folks.
And again, if you want to find out more or let someone else know about that, the information is posted at riograndefoundation.org on the events page. Another article from Errors of Enchantment on the fact that UNM can no longer discriminate against conservative speakers. What was happening, Paul, and what do we see happening now, hopefully in the future?
Yeah, I put this in the category of another item of good news. Several months ago, Riley Gaines, a former University of Kentucky swimmer, was invited to speak at UNM's campus. She was charged a very substantial fee of $10,000 for additional security that was never charged to other speakers on the political left. And she sued. Her Turning Point New Mexico was the sponsor, and they got a ruling from a federal court that said that you cannot have fees for security charged to speakers based on their ideology, because left-wing speakers never targeted for these fees. The left-wing comes out and protests people like Riley Gaines for making the very radical statement that men and women are different and shouldn't be competing against each other in, for example, women's sports, where men sometimes like to decide to jump in to the fray and partake in sports against women, where they have a pretty good shot of winning in a lot of instances. So very unfair to women and just a generally bad idea. So kudos to Miss Gaines and the judge, and thankfully UNM is being held to account, and I understand they are not likely to appeal that decision and will no longer charge those fees on conservative speakers.
And in a similar article in regards to gender ideology, that covered in that article gender ideology to hit UNM women's volleyball team. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, this one, I would say, is a little more in the Debbie Downer situation, but make your own decisions on this one. 1 week from today, San Jose State University volleyball will be hitting Johnson Gym on the campus of University of New Mexico to play a volleyball game against UNM's Lobos. San Jose State happens to have a male on their volleyball team. Four teams have refused to compete, basically saying, no, this is not what's supposed to happen. And even though the conference and the NCAA have abandoned their responsibilities to protect women and women's spaces, those schools being, by the way, Boise State, Wyoming, Southern Utah, and I believe Utah State. So four schools. And I could see this coming because, of course, Lobos play in the Mountain West, what is left of it. And I knew that there was going to be a time of deciding for UNM's volleyball program to determine whether they were going to play against a biological male or not. I have seen announcements since I wrote this piece that indeed UNM will be playing the match. So no principled stand, unfortunately, for UNM. I don't know if this is internally the team. And look, I get it. You are trying to win a championship. You're trying to practice your skills, put them out there. I understand the desire to play in the game. I don't know who is ultimately kind of pushing this and making decisions based on whether to play or not play. But UNM will be playing against a biological male on October 17th at Johnson Gym, and that's San Jose State University. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all goes.
Well, listen, Paul Gessing has been our guest for the full hour today. We'll do this again after the election, so it'll be interesting in about a month. You can find Paul on the tippingpointnm.com website, where you'll find his podcast, riograndefoundation.org. Remember that federal judicial nominations event happening there on what to expect in the next administration. And then also errorsofenchantment.com. Rio Grande Foundation is a not-for-profit organization. And Paul, you and the team putting a lot of work into all this information. And I'm sure on riograndefoundation.org there's a place for them to support financially and probably connect and just let you know that what you're doing is making a difference.
Thank you, and go vote, especially once early voting begins on the 19th.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. ABQ Connect, Jay Sekulow next at 3 o'clock. It's In the Market. Make sure you're tuned in throughout the afternoon. ABQ Connect, KLYT.